those generous exaggerations. I'd love to meet the person you were describing. I want to start by thanking Mrs. Levitt and the student leadership, Akiva and Noam, for this opportunity to talk to speak with you fellows and to share some ideas together. I hope this is going to be the beginning of a conversation, both because practically I'm under very tight time constraints, as Mrs. Levitt knows. I'm supposed to be at a wedding in Long Island pretty soon. Not my Ayin Baruch Hashem, happily married. But I am supposed to be under there relatively soon. So hopefully we'll begin now and the conversation will continue. But not only because practically we're not going to have as much time as I would love to sit and schmooze now, but because ongoing conversations are the best. And hopefully we'll have opportunities, lunch and whenever, as a group or in smaller groups and smaller fora, to continue the conversation. As anyone who learns Gemara knows that the study of Yadus, the study of Yiddishkeit, involved a tremendous amount of asking questions and searching for answers. Speaking of asking questions and searching for answers, just sort of before we get into our topic tonight, just a bit of his bonus for one who engages in debates. I think something, an honest question we ought to be asking ourselves is about honest questions. And I think it's important to grapple with if I train myself to argue both sides of the issue, so that certainly hones certain rhetorical skills. It hones certain skills of thought, certain habits of thought. It hones your ability to articulate and to present well, to structure ideas and to convey them effectively. You do at the same time have to ask yourself, what does it do to my epistemology? What does it do to my sense of truth? Because what we seek in the ultimately is Bikush Eves. What we seek is to understand things as they are. And when you see Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel debate an issue, and then one says to the other, but I think you're right. Or you see at the beginning of Masech Perek Eilu Metzias, Rav and Abaye have a long, extensive debate about the question of Yishul Amidas, questions of intent and inadvertent action. And then one says to the other, but I think I have a proof for your opinion. It's that sort of intellectual honesty. It's not about winning. It's about getting at things as they really are, understanding MS. That has to be, in terms of life decisions and in terms of shaping our axiology, shaping our values, who we are, what we are, it needs to ultimately be about understanding MS as is, seeking to understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu as best we can, seeking to understand what He wants of us as best we can, rather than maintaining the party line, or, you know, if I staked out an opinion, it will be right even if it's wrong. That's the thing is very important. The skills are valuable. The skills of thought and the skills of articulation are definitely valuable, but I think that a lot of hisbonin is necessary to make sure that my core sense of reality and of truth, my epistemology, remains whole and wholesome. That's just, I think, a general thought. If you guys want to talk about this some other time, I'm more than glad. But I want to dive in. We don't have a tremendous amount of time. I want to dive in to tonight's conversation. Harassment has been very much a part of the national conversation of late. And Baruch Hashem. Because what we've been discovering is that there's been incredible chet on so many levels that our general American society, a Western society, has given men, primarily men, women as well, but given men a pass on all sorts of often hideous activities. Natural expressions of normal human desire, but desire that's been unchecked in absolutely inappropriate ways. And I'd like to briefly sort of lay out the beginning of a Torah perspective on this, both in terms of its essence and in terms of a strategy for dealing and containing it. And in terms of its essence, so psychologists who deal with abuse point out the abuse is often less about the content of the hitting or the sexual encounter, and many times more about the control, about the fact that I'm in a position of power and you're gonna do what I want to do rather than what you want to do. It may have different contexts, some tragic, some incredibly tragic, but obviously a very significant piece of the story of all the stories that have been coming out of late is abuse of power. Is abuse of power and treating someone else as an object rather than as a fellow human being. And then, of course, the other half of the story is sexual desire is a normal, healthy part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us, and it's meant to be checked and controlled and engaged in a thoughtful, disciplined way, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu lays out for all of humanity, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu lays out even more extensively for members of Am Yisrael. And what we're seeing is, again, both the Bein Adam L'Chaveiro abuse and treating others as objects rather than as fellow subjects, and the utter lack of sexual discipline. Now, the truth is, before we get into details, is this worth considering from a hashkafic perspective, if you will? The Ravid, one of the greatest of the Sfardi or Provençal Rishonim, in addition to some of his more famous works, wrote a very important Sefer Halacha entitled Bali HaNefesh, primarily about the halachas of Nida. And he has one section at the end called Shar HaKedusha, which moves away from the focus on restrictions and looks at the positive picture that ought to prevail. What a healthy, happy, holy Torah perspective is on human sexuality. And one of the key points that he visits again and again over the course of Shara Kedusha, this is something that I've heard Rabbi Yaakov Neuberger point out multiple times, is what one of the essential halachic values at play in the guidelines that the Torah has for the way a intimate relation husband and wife ought to play out is aside from some of the more obvious values, is the insistence that it be an expression of a relationship. That it be not the only, but one of the important expressions of the unique relationship between husband and wife. It's meant to be give physical expression to emotional relationship. That is absolutely the diametrically opposed to pornography, diametrically opposed to harassment. In both of those situations, sexuality is being distorted from the way Rabbi Shalom created to be an expression of focus on care on another human being, to just treating someone else as an object. Whether it's a viewing pornography, in which obviously no relationship whatsoever, it's the shallowest of shallow, it's the bizarro to the Superman of something substantive, and it's total objectification of the person whose picture you're viewing, Rahman al-Islam, as well as in a situation of harassment, the Gemara, Gemara and Dharam talks about even more mild situations where someone is taking pleasure at someone else's expense. That is exactly the opposite of the picture HaKadosh Baruch Hu has for us. And that sort of lays a groundwork in terms of how we think about this essentially. In terms of how we think about this strategically, so let me lay out a little bit, and then hopefully we can have time for a couple of questions. And then, as I said before, I look forward to opportunities to continue the conversation. It strikes me, and actually has struck many other writers recently as well. I have actually in a copy of an article here by Rabbi Emanuel Feldman, who for decades was a Rav in Atlanta, very well spoken, very well written, a Talmud Chacham, with extraordinary literary gifts. And then he wrote a piece recently on the topic that we're going to touch on tonight, which is that halacha has plenty to say about strategies for combating harassment. And were halachic strategies to be valued, respected, and also implemented, almost all the situations would have been deftly avoided. I speak in particular to the halachas of yichud. If I could trouble you to pass this back. Trouble you to pass. Probably have more than enough copies here. Let me just say in advance, as we open some text, I know some people are excited to see text, and some people are taken aback to see text. It is here only as your friend. You need not follow along inside. If you'd like to, you certainly can. And our values, as the Rav taught us, the moral, ethical, religious principles that guide our lives, the philosophy of halacha is to be found in plumbing halachic details. Let's talk about some of those details. Mishnah introduces us on Maseches in the very end of Maseches Kiddushin, Daf Pei, Amud Beis. In many ways, it's less the end of Kiddushin, more the end of Seder Nashim. There's an important issue that hasn't really found its address yet over the course of Seder Nashim. Rabbi Yonasi gave it a home at the very end of the last Masechta. And I refer, of course, to the Easter of Yichud. The Mishnah tells us that the halacha has restrictions on men and women being secluded together in small quantities. And the Gemara goes on to point out that if it's, to make a long story short, a beautiful Pnei Yeshua on this Gemara, Kiddushin Daf Pei Amud Beis, that in a situation, Gemara marshals sources from Psukim, which according to all or almost all Rishonim, generate substantive drushes that generate an Isur Daraisa of Yichud in a one-on-one situation, be besesa. For a man and woman to be besesa, if they don't have a close familial relationship, obviously time doesn't allow us to get involved in all the halachic details. I should mention that on the front cover of the packet, if you're interested, Kiva can clue you in some more, but if you're interested in a longer, far more thorough treatment of the sugyas halacha l'maisa, you can follow that link to some audio. But to make a long story short, the Gemara lays out a one-on-one yichud is an isur d'oraisa. As a matter of fact, Rav Shach has a fascinating idea in Avi Ezri. And he suggests that one-on-one yichud is not only a practical consideration. If you avoid yichud, you'll avoid deeper sin, you'll avoid actual sexual contact. But he points out that yichud itself, for two people to be alone, is in itself almost like a hands-free, contact-free degree of intimacy. A degree of intimacy which, like negia, or to use the halachic term kiravasar, is itself inappropriate outside of particular relationships. So the yichud daraisa, the one-on-one situation, it's a little too intimate unless there's an appropriate, it's in the context of an appropriate family relationship. Gemara goes on, now the Mishnah tells us that not only is yichud asar in a one-on-one situation, one man, one woman, but even three is a crowd. So once you're more than two people, there's no Isra Yichud Daraisa, but there is at times, Chazal sometimes extended the Isra Yichud to include more than two people as well. So the Mishnah lays out one situation where that's the case. Lo yisached adam im shtei nashim, aval isha achas misachedes im shnei anashim. As a rule of thumb, there are exceptions in both directions. As a rule of thumb, two men and a woman is permitted, but two women and a man is not. That's a din d'rabbanan. The Gemara wants to know why, and the Gemara's answer is a line that has been terribly abused and taken out of context. The Gemara says, how come we're more concerned with the possibility of further inappropriate behavior when you have two women and a man than when you have two men and a woman? So the Gemara says, Ho'ova nashim daiton kalas aleihem. That has been terribly mistranslated as women are intellectually deficient. That's not at all the context. And the Gemara only makes it reference to this in this context. What does Nashim Daitan Kalas mean? It has nothing to do with intellectual capability. Rashi makes it clear it has to do instead with the psychodynamic between men and women. And studying trends, there are exceptions to every rule. But if you're talking about tendencies, it's more likely, Rashi points out, that, and that certainly has been, as we've seen time and again, the salacious stories have been in the news, it's more likely that inappropriate sexual contact is more typically initiated by a man than by a woman. Again, there are exceptions to every rule. If you're playing the odds, you're looking at probabilities, which is what Yichud is all about. You can never entirely obviate the possibility of chet, but you can put enough safeguards into place that we've sufficiently reduced the possibility of chet that the situation is mutter to enter. So Rashi points out what the Gemara is saying is that since it's more typically men who will assert and initiate inappropriate encounter than women, so there's more of a concern of that yichud may lead to something worse if you have a single man in the room together with two women. Obviously, that is less likely than ish echad v'ish achas, but that's still not uncommon enough. We haven't sufficiently inhibited the situation. If you have two men and a woman, because of the asymmetry in the relationships, that's a situation where it's even less likely that this that crowd will lead to chet. So again, if you have ish echad v'ish achas and isa daraisa, ish echad v'shtei nashim v'isha drabanam, and shnei anashim v'ish achas, that already is heter gamar. Over the course, there's a tremendous amount of richness of detail in the sugyas and the halacha l'maisa. I want to touch on a couple of key points. Number one, as you moved sort of down the page, we looked at sources 1 and 2. As you moved down to the bottom of Peyam and Beis, source 3, Gemara points out, Hilchos Yichud are incredibly realistic. It's ironic, Rabbi Feldman notes in his article, which I'll pass around afterwards, that there's sometimes this canard that the Hilchos Yichud are antiquated, they're medieval, we should get in touch with the times, Chazal were out of touch. He says, nothing could be further from the truth. If you needed proof, certainly following the news unfortunately indicates that advances, technological advances and advances, cultural advances have not allowed us necessarily to naturally control our desires without external structure. And Chazal were incredibly realistic. They point out at the bottom of Peyam Beis that the numbers are nice, but that's only assuming you're dealing with people of decent morals. If you're dealing with people of loose morals, Gemara says, Lo shanol b'ksheirim. They said two men and a woman is not a yichad. That's if you're talking about two people who are disciplined and maintain the halachic discipline regarding appropriate and inappropriate sexual behavior. I will be prutzim if they're not, if they're unchecked people, the people of loose morals, I feel be'asar and aminal. A woman's going to walk into a room with 10 men. A woman will walk into a frat house. There may be 10, 20 men. If one is more loose than the next, the number of men there is not going to create a heter yichud. One needs to be realistic. When we talk about hilchos yichud break down into, Rabbi Shechter often says when he begins the shiur of hilchos yichud, hilchos yichud is the study of kulos. It's the study of heter, study of license, because the first sif, more or less tells us, yichud is us. The rest of the conversation is what needs to be in place in a situation so that it's appropriate. What needs to be in place in a situation? What do I need to do to change, tweak the situation so that this is no longer a problematic place to be? In terms of the tweaking that happens, sometimes it's a question of what the Mishnah talks about, adding shomrim, bringing more people in, invite more people in so it's public enough. Then people are keeping each other honest. And sometimes it's just a question of the situation itself. Is it private or is it public? The Gemara is clear on the top of Payal from now, just because you're in the great outdoors does not necessarily mean there's no yichud. You're hiking together, a couple, unmarried couple, hiking together in a secluded nature preserve could potentially be problematic. Indoors, outdoors doesn't have to do with whether there's a roof over your head or not. It has to do with, is there traffic? Are there people around? Is it public or private in terms of traffic? That's centrally driven and wrapped around what appears here as a source number 5, a line in the Gemara in the middle of Pei Aleph Amin Aleph. Rav Yosef tells us as Pesach Pasuach L'Rishus HaRabim in Choshishin Mishum Yichud. If you have an open door policy, so then you have no concerns of Yichud. We don't have time to dig into detail. Poskim discuss, does that mean an unlocked door or does that mean an open door? Are we talking about a situation where it's just where you're actually visible, or is it enough that's a situation of uninhibited entry, that people may be coming and going? Poskim point out that itself may hinge on halacha lamasa and the degree of familiarity between the people who are alone. That once it's libo gaspa, the people who are more comfortable with one another may need to be more careful. So it could be that that's a common approach in poskim. If people are very comfortable with one another, but have an iser yichud, not your sister or your mother or your wife, but someone with whom you have an iser yichud, but there's a lot of familiarity, there you might insist on actual visibility. Being in a place where people are passing by at least once every 5-10 minutes, and you're visible to the street, you're visible to passersby. Whereas if people are not familiar with each other, then many poskim are willing to adopt the less robust standard of if it's a situation of uninhibited entry where people could really, not just the door is unlocked but no one would ever walk in, but a situation where there's a real chance that people will be coming, or you've invited the next door neighbor, you invited a friend, saying, you have a yichud problem, so I'm leaving the door open and feel free to pop in. There are cookies on the kitchen counter, come in when you want. So that can solve the problem. That can solve the problem. I'll share with you a story, and then two final sort of closing thoughts within the sugya. A story about Pesach Pasuach L'Shus HaRabim, and a story that speaks to being ambitious both in sensitivity b'ram l'chaveiro and in standards b'ram l'makom. Chaim Ozer was between World War I and World War II, he was seen by many as the leader of Orthodox Jewry in Eastern Europe. Certainly, one of the leading halachic authorities. He was one of the leaders in terms of trying to figure out how to save the maximum number of people from an impending tragedy of the Holocaust. And he had the weight of tens of thousands, not hundreds of thousands, on his shoulders. He's approached by a young woman. She tells him that she's getting married soon. Mazel tov. Wonderful. How can I help you? She's an orphan. She's motherless. And at the time, the standard was that a woman about to get married would sit with her mother. Her mother would teach her practical hilchos nida so she would know how to run a Jewish home. She said, I have no mother. And before, in between the wars, the family matrices were an incredibly stray. There probably no answer on either. She doesn't have anyone. Can you teach me? She says to one of the Gedolei Dor, can you teach me hilchos nida? So he's thinking very quickly. He could send to this one, to that one. But she needs help. She needs a net. And she's Yisoma. And she needs TLC. At the same time, it has to be appropriate. He could take her for, they could sit in the park. They could go for a walk outside. But how will she feel? So here's what he did. Story is told. He said, please, have a seat. And he stood at his window. And for the next hour or two or three, stood there and tore all of his needed. Viewed with her, made sure she understood it. And at the same time, maintained her privacy, maintained her comfort, and maintained the highest standards of care that was Yichud. Because he was visible to the street the whole time. He stood there for hours so that he would be visible and so that she could be comfortable. And that really bespeaks what it is that we're trying to achieve, is to be ambitious on both fronts. It's not either or. It's not a dichotomy. It's this and. Both of them are parts of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If you look at the beginning of Parshas Kedoshim, it's an almost random seeming, incredibly stochastic seeming, a slew of mitzvahs. All over the place. Why? Because Kedusha is born not of specializing in one area of halacha. Kedusha is born of being ambitious to embrace the full extent, the full sweep and scope of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's expectations of us. And just to sort of frame things, one larger meta halachic issue, because the Gemara makes a little bit of reference in point 4 and Pei Aleph Amud Aleph, it's more extensively discussed in Masechet Ksubos, Sota, and elsewhere, is that Hilchos Yichud are the floor, they're not the ceiling. You begin with a set of objective standards, and if you haven't met the standards of Hilchos Yichud, you got to walk out of the situation, or fix it. Bring more people in, open a window, open a door, figure what you can do to tweak the situation. But that's the floor. There may be situations where, technically speaking, it's not Yichud, but it's what the Gemara calls Mechur Hadavar. It's slimy. It doesn't feel sketchy. It doesn't feel right. It's not smooth. Technically, Pesach Pasuach. Technically, Ashnei Nashim Chim. But it doesn't pass the sniff test. That's a halachic standard as well. And if it's Mechur Hadavar, that's independent, sufficient cause to need to walk away from that situation or adapt that situation and make it appropriate. That's one very important meta-issue that comes into play. They were seeking to both satisfy the technical standards of Yichud as well as satisfy the sniff test that's not the Mechur HaDavar. Now, if the Gemara seems to say here in Pei Aleph Amud Aleph that Bezin would potentially give an Onish Malchus for someone engaged in a situation which doesn't pass the sniff test, even though it technically is clean. And the other issue, and with this we close, because this is the way it brings this home, is Gemara tells a remarkable story. You don't have time to read it within, but I strongly recommend you take a look. As like most stories in most narrative modes in Gemara, it's a heavier Aramaic, but it is well worth it. The Gemara, let me briefly excerpt. The Gemara tells the story of Rav Amram. Even among the Amram was an unusual tzaddik. A group of young women were captured by pirates in a different community, and the pirates were seeking to sell them to the highest bidder. Rav Amram's town, they docked in Rav Amram's town. The members of the community pooled their funds. They buy back these young women, and they're going to send them home. They need somewhere to stay for an hour or two until they figure out how transportation is going to work. They say, we'll leave them in the attic of the tzaddik, the second floor. In the days of Talmudic architecture, they didn't have steps to go from the first floor to the second floor. They didn't have permanent steps. They had a ladder. You had a skylight, sort of, between the first and second floor, and you had a ladder. Sometimes the ladder was pretty heavy. And you move the ladder into place. You climb up and down. You move the ladder away. You can't go up. You can't go down. So these women were staying in Rav Amram's attic, the second floor of Amram's home, and the ladder was moved away, and the ladder was incredibly, it was heavy enough to require multiple people to move it. He's walking by down below, catches a particularly attractive glimpse of one of the women, and is inflamed with desire. The Gemara says the adrenaline starts pumping. He grabs this ladder, which usually required multiple people to carry it, and brings the ladder over and starts climbing up. He's interested in this woman. Frightened. It's about to get both, at the same time, frightening and incredibly inspiring, all at the same time. He's climbing up the ladder. The Gemara says, he says to himself, what am I doing? What on earth has possessed me? I can't do this. This is totally inappropriate. I can't go up. And he doesn't want to let himself go up, and he can't get himself to go down because that girl was so attractive. And he goes, Ifshach. He's like, squeezes his legs against the outside of the side posts of the ladder. He doesn't want to let himself go up, but he can't get himself down. He's figuratively and literally caught. He's in the middle. He's like, what a visual metaphor. And you know what he does? He starts screaming fire. Nurbe Amram starts just yelling. There's a fire in Amram's home. You yell fire, everyone comes running. They all come running. And they say, Rebbe, this is incredibly awkward. Tina, this is so incredibly awkward. So embarrassing. And he says, you're right. It's embarrassing for you. It's embarrassing for me. But better that you be embarrassed of me in Olam Hazeh than that you be embarrassed of me in Olam Haba. Mutav tichsu be Amram ba'al mahadein, better you be embarrassed of me here, in this world, lo tichsu me al madasi. The alternative would have been I would have yielded, and I would have ended up upstairs in bed with all those women, and no one would be the wiser for now, perhaps, but Ribbono Shel Olam knows exactly what's going on, whether people know or not, and l'olam haba, you would be eternally embarrassing. Now the Rambam, so two things about this story. Number one, the Rambam, in his coda, in his close to Hilchas Yisurei Bia, the last parak is about Hilchas Yichud, parak Chavdeis. I recommend that you read, if you have time, to read Halachas Yudches, Yudches Chav. From Halachas Yudches to the end, it's easy. This is easy Neil Mishnah Hebrew, the way the Rambam always writes in Mishnah Torah. Highly recommend it. And he talks about the fact that this is something that always, every community has this. He says there's never been a time in Jewish history when there's never been a Jewish community that hasn't had someone who had difficulty controlling, who did not control himself sexually. And he says, the greatest protection is yichud. V'yizar min ha-yichud shehu ha-gorim ha-gadol. Being inappropriate alone is an incredibly powerful force, driving one to want to sin further. And if you avoid yichud, it's almost impossible to get into deeper trouble. And then he says, G'dolei chachamim hayo, this is something that's very important to the present social milieu. He says, the greatest talmid chachamim would talk with their talmidim about this. And they would say, could you stay here because I don't want to have an issur yichud. And sometimes even a chumrah, a situation where we've been mutter anyways. Why, says the Rambam, K'dei l'amei l'talmidim shal yizbay shumidav arzeb yisrachum ha-yichud. To teach your talmidim, don't be embarrassed to say, I'm yichud sensitive. I keep yichud, and I'm proud of it. I respect women, and that's why I keep yichud. I respect them as people. I don't see them as objects. And I respect the power of the sexual drive HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me, and it can be used for incredibly good purposes. And I respect the fact that power could, unchecked, lead to horrific consequences. physically, morally, and I'm proud to keep Hilchos Yichud. And that's what you see, unbelievable. It certainly comes out shining from the story of Rav Yamam. The other aspect, with this we close, is what was driving Rav Amram's strength was Emunah. Because he knew, I could go upstairs and no one will be the wiser. The women may keep the secret. No other human being will ever know. But there's more to life than the here and now. And the more you can adopt a long-term perspective, long-term even Olam Hazeh, and certainly to see the Olam Hazeh as a whole is but one phase of a two-phase reality that Kadosh Baruch Hu has in store for us, it's never worth it. It's true in terms of honesty with money. It's true in terms of honesty with relationships. It's true in terms of honesty with intimacy. The more I become Olam Haba aware, the more I become HaKadosh Baruch Hu aware, God consciousness is known in Hebrew as Yiras Shamayim. It's transformative. It's paradigm shifting. And it gives me strength that I could not otherwise access. And that comes to this. What's this? Doorstop. So a fellow in my shul, a neighbor of mine, the name of Ari Jacobson, he's a lawyer in private practice right over the bridge. So he had the suggestion that now would be a great time to introduce the world to the ancient halakhic wisdom of Yichud. Because as we just had a chance to discuss in the last number of minutes, this has been very much a part of our consciousness and our concern for millennia. And there has been sort of this movement over the last couple of decades that, you know, modern and postmodern human beings are beyond mean restrictions, and unfortunately we've discovered that those rituals are necessary if only to protect other people. So his thought is, let's put together Project Doorstop, where to create a social movement in which people, women carry doorstops. Because imagine, his dream is to send a doorstop to every single one of the 535 congressional offices in Washington. He wants to send it to college students across the country in their college's colors. And say, great, if you're not willing to meet, if you won't let me put a doorstop in the door, you're not willing to meet me, sit down and talk with me in an open door setting, then this meeting shouldn't happen. To create, to be an Orla Goyen, and to be able to share some of our values with general society in a way that perhaps are more open now than they once were, that would be something worth accomplishing. So these are, I think, some of the both halakhic perspective or shabbat perspective that should, it's obvious to us that Erasmus is wrong. Hopefully is a prima facie obvious davar pashut to any decent person, but to be able to talk about it in a more sophisticated way, to have that, in how many different ways it runs contrary to our values. And to be able to not only articulate it from a values perspective, but also to be able to develop practical, we have practical guidelines that are meant to allow us to discipline ourselves. These are some of the important issues. I would love to stick around coming for questions. Again, like I said before, I'm sorry that I can't stick around extensively. I would love to stick around for an hour, but there's a chuppah happening not too long from now in Moran. Yeah, so let's get started now, and I'd love to continue after us. And one more thing, I'm going to turn off the recording so that people will feel more comfortable asking questions.